Chittamatra would refute matter, and even Prasangika refute matter, because the definition of matter is that which is atomically established.
Right.
Established meaning like existing
yeah.
in from its own side in that way. So both Prasangika would say, yes, we can talk about atoms, but they're not established from their own side. So the way matter is defined, Prasangika would sort of look at the definition and go, I don't know if we'd accept that. And Chittamatran certainly wouldn't accept that, because for them, everything is internal to the mind. There's no matter.
There's no matter. So
no.
Everything is just mind. There's
yeah.
Nothing else other than mind.
Yeah. And again, remember, well, we have to be careful when we say that. We're not saying that is mind.
Yeah.
Because a mind is an awareness. That's not an awareness. It's of the nature of the mind. It's mental stuff. So we have to be careful. Mind only doesn't mean everything's mind. It means phenomena are the nature of the mind, meaning there's no physical phenomena. So that's mind only. So this is not a mind in Chittamatra, but it's mental stuff. Like the analogy of a dream. You know, in a dream, when we're dreaming, we see and we go, oh, look, there's a flower. It's, you know, it's solid, it's material. But then when we become lucid in the dream, we'll go, oh, well, actually, it's not, is it? It's of the nature of the mind. It's a manifestation of my dream mind. Even though it appears to be atomically established, there's no atoms in a dream flower. So that's one of the things they use as an analogy or reasoning to show that we are also, not deluded, we are deceived by our waking world. That also there appears to be material stuff, but if we realize emptiness, we become lucid, we realize this is also the nature of the mind. Like a dream is one of the things they use.
Like energy or anything like we know about.
No, I mean, of course you can talk about atoms and energy in Chittamatra, but they're not physical based.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't think Chittamatra would have a problem to talk about energy and atoms, but they're not material, they're not physical. So as long as we understand that. Yeah, and they still function, of course. You know, they're not Chittamatrans, like all Buddhist schools assert a functioning world. They're not saying that somehow it doesn't function. So also with Prasangika, of course, when people look at Prasangika, the view of emptiness there, the lower schools and non-Buddhists would go, well, if everything's empty, how can things function? You know, if everything's... And also with Chittamatrans, others would say, well, if it's the nature of the mind, how can it function? It's just fabrication. That's what they say, but Chittamatra and also Prasangika in their own view would say there is not that logical consequence that either because it's the nature of the mind or it's empty of inherent existence, it doesn't function. That's your wrong reasoning leads you to believe that, but we have very solid reasoning to show that in the Chittamatra, even though it's nature of the mind, it functions, and in Prasangika, even though things lack inherent existence, they function. So that's the sort of argument.
The difference seems to be that in Prasangika there is external energy as a base, and it only can form forms when we experience it, observe it.
I think, of course, in Chittamatra, we talk about form.
Yeah, but you're saying it's in the nature of mind.
Yeah, and so all Buddhist schools talk about form, talk about, you know, sense objects, but what is their nature? I mean, the lower two schools say that these are truly existent external. Chittamatra say they're truly existent, but they're internal. And Majjhimika or Prasangika would say they're not truly existent, but they're external. But again, for Prasangika, for something to be external does not imply that it's independent of the mind. Right, but as we're going to see in Prasangika, we have to be careful when we talk about basis. Yeah. Because normally the way we talk about, well, there has to be a basis, it's sort of we're saying, oh, okay, yes, the flower is just merely imputed, but there's really a basis there. I mean, that's grasping onto things being independent. Yeah. I mean, yeah, but Right. You know, often this is the argument people use, and we're going off tangent a bit, but just to give you a quick answer, and we'll talk about more about that tomorrow. You know, we talk about a basis for applying flower, the term, the label flower. But how can you talk about a basis without the thing that's the basis of? So it only becomes a basis when you label flower. Then it becomes a basis for flower. There's not a basis there before that you're applying flower to, because you can only have a basis of designation if you have a designation. Otherwise, how can you talk about the word basis?
I guess what we're having difficulty with from our discussion is how things function unless there is some kind of physical, even if it's a very subtle physical aspect of it.
Again, Prasangika would have no argument with saying there's physical stuff. They're not arguing that. They're arguing how does this physical and mental stuff exist? Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, the saying that the physical stuff does not exist?
All of them. Oh, well, it depends what you mean by physical.
Yeah.
See, I mean, they, of course, like all Buddhist systems, they talk about form and consciousness. You know, there are sense objects. You know, we talked about that.
Yeah.
They talk about the five sense objects, forms and so forth. It's their nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're not external. They're not material. They're not physical in the sense of being external. They're physical, but it depends how we use that word physical.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If we can use it as to distinguish from consciousness, then yes, it's physical. But physical, if we use here Chittamatra, if they would use the word physical, that would not imply that they're atomically based external phenomena. But probably they wouldn't really use the word physical because it sort of implies that. The way we usually use the word physical. So again, they're not saying flowers are mind. They're the nature of the mind. They're mental stuff. They're not external physical stuff. Okay, let's move on in the text. So we were down the bottom of page 15. So we're talking about perception. And the last thing we saw was that yogic perception is necessarily non-mistaken. So the next sentence says, sense perception in the continual and ordinary being is necessarily a mistaken consciousness. So why is that the case for Chittamatra? Why is sense perception? Because sense perception for the lower schools is non-mistaken, or can be mistaken and non-mistaken, but here they're saying it's necessarily mistaken. So why is a sense perception necessarily mistaken? For Chittamatra. Let's say the sense perception observing this flower. No. Sorry? Why is it mistaken with respect to the
appearing object is appearing directly to the eye consciousness, yeah? So
why is that mistaken? For Chittamatra, we're talking Chittamatra now. Exactly. It's mistaken because it appears to be external. So that sense perception is mistaken. For the lower schools, of course, it's not mistaken because things do exist externally. So that's why they're saying it's necessarily mistaken. Remember, it says in the continuum an ordinary being. Yeah.
But it's not compromising perception, but it's copying an eye sense consciousness, for example, at the beginning of the flower. Surely that self-cognizer would itself be mistaken.
Remember, the self-cognizer is only apprehending the mind, the consciousness.
But it's apprehending a consciousness, which the consciousness is mistaken.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It's apprehending the consciousness, which of course is not external.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that doesn't matter. Okay. Mental perception in the continuum and ordinary being can either be mistaken or non-mistaken. So any ideas what the two examples would be? Mental perception in the continuum and ordinary being can either be mistaken or non-mistaken. So anyone like to posit either of those two, an example for either one of those two? So remember mental perception.
What moment of mental perception where their sense of consciousness is mistaken?
Would be mistaken or unmistaken? Yeah, it would be mistaken, yeah. So the example of mistaken mental perception would be that one moment of mental perception that follows sense perception, because remember the sense perception is necessarily mistaken. So that one moment of mental perception is also mistaken because the flower is appearing to be external. So that's an example of mistaken. What about non-mistaken mental perception? We're talking about ordinary being, yeah, clairvoyance. Clairvoyance, because clairvoyance is not an external object, it's an internal, it's a mental object. Okay. Perception is not necessarily valid perception because although there exists a mental perception apprehending form in the continuum and ordinary being, there does not exist a valid mental perception apprehending form in the continuum. That's fairly straightforward, that mental perception is a perception, but it's not a valid perception because it's inattentive. It's only one moment. It's a little technical point, but we don't need to do any more of that. And then self-cognition, experiencing a mental perception apprehending form in the continuum and ordinary being, and the second moment of a sense perception apprehending form are non-valid cognitions. Why are they non-valid?
The second, not the prior.
Yeah, so the second moment of a sense perception apprehending form is non-valid because it's a subsequent cognition. What about the first one? Self-cognition experiencing a mental perception apprehending form in the continuum of a ordinary being. Isn't mental perception apprehending form a mistaken consciousness? So for the lower schools, if it's mistaken, it's necessarily a wrong consciousness. Which, of course, Prasangika don't accept, but we'll come to that later. So then we saw the four types of yogic perception. So we can directly realize subtle impermanence, subtle selfness as a phenomena, coarse selfness of person, coarse selfness of person, and selfness of phenomena. So to have those clear, because that comes up next, we can look at our coarse and subtle selflesses chart. And we can see that for Chittamatra, when we talk about selflesses of person, it's the same as all the lower schools plus the Svatantrika. The coarse selflesses of person is realizing person being empty of unitary, unchanging, independent self. And subtle selfness of a person is person being empty of self-sufficient, substantial, existent self. And then the selfness is a phenomena. The example given here is form and valid cognition, apprehending that form, being empty of being different substances, meaning realizing there's no external world, that everything's internal to the mind. So those are what we're talking about here in these yogic perception. And then the next two paragraphs is, again, a very minute technical point, but we'll read it out anyway because it's in the text. Valid inference is necessarily conceptual. If it is an inference with respect to a phenomenon, it is not necessarily a conception with respect to that phenomena, because although the inference realizing sound to be impermanent is an inference with respect to sound being empty of being permanent, it is not a conception with respect to that. And the reasoning is follows. It's a very minute technical point. It says this is so because if it is a conception with respect to a phenomena, the aspect of that phenomena necessarily arises And with respect to the inference realizing sound to be impermanent, the aspect of sound being empty of being permanent does not arise. Therefore, that inference does not explicitly realize sound to be empty of being impermanent. It realizes implicitly when it realizes sound to be impermanent. it's a very obscure point. To try and summarize that, it's basically saying that when we have an inference realizing impermanence of sound explicitly, implicitly we're realizing that it's empty of being permanent. But that's not a conception with respect to that, because we're not having a conception of sound to be permanent. That's all. So it's a minor technical point. We don't really need to worry about it. I don't know even why they brought it in there. It's just, I don't know. Let's move on. So next section, the way of asserting selfnesses. So the way of positing illustrations of coarse and subtle selfnesses of a person is similar to svatantrikism below. So we see in the coarse and subtle selfnesses chart that svatantrika, which is one of the Madhyamika schools, so basically all schools below Prasangika have the same assertion when it comes to selfnesses of person, those two levels. So that's what it's saying here. An illustration of selfnesses of phenomena is the emptiness that is a form and the valid cognition apprehending that form being empty of being different substances. So we have that as the illustration of selfnesses of phenomena. And the other one, remember if we go back to page 14, it gave two illustrations of subtle selfnesses of phenomena in your text. It gave that one, the emptiness that is a form of valid cognition apprehending that form being empty of being different substances, and also gave the second one, that emptiness that is a form being empty of existing by way of its own characteristics as a basis for applying the term form. And we saw that that actually amounts to the same thing. And what I'd like to do briefly now as a little bit of a detour is have a look at terminology and how Chittamatra and Svatantrika and Prasangika have different understanding of certain terms. Because it's going to become, it's related to this, but more important when we get into Svatantrika, Prasangika. So if you'd like to look at your chart, the modes of existence chart, and there are three terms we see in this text so far. So we have these three terms. In fact, in this chart, we have a number of other terms. But the three or four main terms you'll see in this area is true existence, we've seen already. So the lower schools accept that. There's here established by way of its own character. And then there's a third term coming up later, inherent existence, or synonymous with that, existing from its own side. So if we look at this modes of existence chart, what we can see is that for the Prasangika, all those terms are synonymous because they reject all of those. And so for Prasangika, they all mean the same thing. No, because not because they reject them, because they actually imply the same. So to talk more about that, we can look at, if you look at Svatantrika, which is also Madhyamika, so Svatantrika, of course, would reject true existence because the lower schools accept that. Being Madhyamika, all Madhyamikas reject true existence. But then, if we look in Svatantrika, under all phenomena conventionally, they do in fact accept that phenomena are established by way of their own character, and they inherently exist, and they exist from their own side. So for Svatantrika, these two terms, or three terms, are synonymous, and they don't mean the same as true existence. Of course, Prasangikas would say, well, that's not what you're saying, is actually a bit illogical. But this is the Svatantrika assertion, that they reject true existence, but they do say that conventional phenomena conventionally, exist by way of their own character, they inherently exist, they exist from their own side. Because for them, if a phenomena is not findable, it doesn't exist. So this is, they say that these three terms are synonymous. And so they accept this and reject that. Yeah.
Then it has to be established by
the character. Yeah, exactly. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the whole chart. That would be true for everyone.
Oh, for everyone. No, because Chittamatra don't accept that. That's where we're going now. So for Chittamatra, also everything inherently exists from its own side. But they would say that, as we saw here, that phenomena are empty of being established by way of their own character as a basis for labelling. So they somehow suggest that this term is not synonymous with these, that this is something a little bit more than inherent existence or existing from its own side.
Is this a stage of development of the meditator, of the yogi? So one progresses.
Yes and no. I mean, of course, each of these schools say they've got the right idea, and they say that the school above them are nihilists, and the one below them are grasping on, they're eternalists. So each one of these four say, no, 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 what we say is true. You guys above us are nihilists because you're refuting too much. And the guys, the ones below us, you don't refute enough.
But is this the academic, but, or are these the practitioners who are arguing?
So that's the thing, is that this is the philosophical positions. But what we said right at the beginning of this, last weekend, in fact, and briefly this weekend, is that these are positions, but as a practitioner, they are helpful because they actually could be... Probably in our own experience, we sort of move through these stages. Or at least these stages would be helpful signposts to understand if we're going in the right direction. That's why we study these different schools, because as a practitioner, even though intellectually we say, oh yes, I think the Prasangika view, that's the right one, in terms of our own experience and practice, we're nowhere near that. So if we can understand the other positions, and then we start to have experiences that sort of match what they're saying, we can go, okay, well, it looks like I'm going in the right direction. Let's keep going that way.
Just repeat the Chittamani take on those.
Chittamatra, yeah. So for Prasangika, they all mean the same thing and they refute all of them. Yes. Svatantrika, yes, because it's Madhyamika, refute true existence. But they say these three terms mean the same thing and we accept them. Because if things didn't exist in these ways, they couldn't exist. Chittamatra goes, in fact, we accept all of them.
Right.
Not for every phenomena, but they accept that certain things truly exist. And they say that these two terms are not synonymous. Because we can see here, for them, these imputational constructs inherently exist, but they do not exist by way of their own character. So for Chittamatrans, this term existing by way of its own character seems to imply something more than inherent existence or existing from its own side, mm-hmm. according to them. Mm-hmm.
So the position of Marshall is when you're breaking it down,
yeah.
So it's just on the point of interpretational constructs that they don't accept existence by way of its own character.
Yeah. Okay. So all I wanted to mention here is when we see these terms, we have to understand which philosophical system is using them, and to understand that they do not all agree in what these terms mean. That's all. That's all I wanted to introduce now, and particularly. Later, when we get into Svatantrika and Prasangika, in those systems, this term is not really used very much. You won't see it in the way... Sometimes, more commonly, you'll get these three terms, true existence, inherent existence, existing from its own side. They're the terms that are more commonly used in Majjhimika speech. And for Prasangika, they are synonymous. For Svatantrika, these are not... don't mean the same thing, because they accept that and they reject that. Of course, Prasangika would say to Svatantrika, by accepting this, you're really accepting that, so you're like one of the lower schools, in fact. But Svatantrika would counter to Prasangika and say, well, by you rejecting all of those, you guys are nihilists. You've rejected too much. But anyway, we'll come to that.
That's really helpful because when you start looking at it, you get your knickers in a twist over these expressions.
And I'll try to define these, particularly these two terms in Svatantrika and Prasangika, what they say they mean, but just to be aware that they don't agree exactly on what they mean. So that's all I wanted to mention. Okay. No, I mean, you still do see it in the Majjhimika, but it's because they somehow need to distinguish something other than the other terms. They have something in there that is different. So then they sort of introduce that term, I think, more. Whereas particularly for Svatantrika and the Prasangika, this term because it doesn't imply anything different than this, you don't see it. So, I mean, why use two different terms for exactly the same thing?
Well,
there's
not the truth.
For? Svatantrika, but Svatantrika.
Yeah.
No. No. Oh, this. So our tantric is following reason. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So, for them. Yeah, for them, it really is sort of more synonymous with this. And they distinguish these two from these two. Yeah. So, again, depending on which school, these have different meanings. That's all. Just to be aware of that. Yeah.
Various established phenomena, they're ultimate, right?
They're emptiness.
Yeah, so how does that include all of those terms?
Because for them, emptiness is truly existent. So emptiness is existing by way of its own character, inherently exists from its own side, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry? Yeah, I mean, that's what is thoroughly established, is the thoroughly established nature is emptiness. We saw that as the, in the division there, where we said that, ultimate truth, there's two divisions of ultimate truth, is selfnesses of person, selfnesses of phenomena. So selfnesses or emptiness, we use interchangeably here. Okay. If we move on in the text then. We're looking at now the presentation of the grounds and paths. So here we have the objects of abandonment, the actual presentation of the grounds and paths. So if we look, then we've got an objects of abandonment chart, so we can have a look at that. So we saw that for the lower two schools, Vaibhashika, Sautrantika, of course, they only talk about afflictive obscurations, abandoning, eliminating this conception of self of person, and there's no such thing as cognitive obscurations. Whereas here in the Chittamatra, the afflictive obscurations are the same, is eliminating this grasping onto self of person. But then the cognitive obscurations is realizing emptiness here, is overcoming this conception, apprehending form, and valid cognition, apprehending form to be different substances. So the cognitive obscurations is this grasping onto external reality, external world. So if we look at then what says in the text, the tenets text for objects of abandonment says the conception of self of persons together with its seeds and the three poisons arising due to the force of that conception together with their seeds are posited as afflictive obscurations. So here the afflictive obscurations is this grasping onto self-sufficient self and then all the mental afflictions that come out of that. Whereas the cognitive obscurations, it says here, there's a few things to comment on this sentence. The conception of things as being true, together with its seeds, the latencies of that conception, and all mistaken and dualistic appearances that arise due to the force of that are posited to be cognitive obscurations. So two things to comment here. First, it says the conception of things as being true. It doesn't say the conception of things as being truly existent. Because things are truly existent for Chittamatra. So remember earlier when we talked about the three natures, we talked about certain things being truly existent and false, certain things being truly existent and true, and things being falsely existent and false. So remember, other powered phenomena, things, were asserted to be truly existent, meaning that they're not merely imputed by conception, they exist from their own side, and they are false. Because whether something's true or false here is talking about the final mode of abiding. How is that thing really existing? So, of course, therefore, what's appearing to us, these things, these functional phenomena, these other powered phenomena, are false because they're not existing as they appear. They appear to be external, but we realize they're not external. So in that sense, they're false. They are truly existent in the fact they are not something merely imputed by conception. They, in fact, do exist independent of the mind, even though they're not external. So here, the conception of things being true, meaning our conception that grasps onto them as being true, meaning as existing externally, is the problem. So that is the cognitive obscurations. So that's the first point. And then it's talking about latencies of that conception and all mistaken dualistic appearance that arise due to the force of that. The wording here is a little bit unclear, but what we're going to see, particularly in the Prasangika, they talk about also latencies of ignorance. And for Prasangika, it's the latencies of ignorance. So we have ignorance or mental afflictions in general, and we can talk about seed. So we can talk about, and this is something that becomes more clear in the Prasangika.
So we seed of ignorance and ignorance. So the seed of ignorance is really our predisposition, our habit. Or another way of saying, we can say the dormant ignorance. Sometimes some systems talk about dormant ignorance. So the seed of ignorance produces ignorance. So this is like our predispositional habit. Because we have that, when we come into contact with an object, we grasp, we have ignorance. And every time we have ignorance, of course, that strengthens the seed, the habit. So it's like a very tight loop, of course. But also here we talk about latencies of that conception, or latencies of ignorance. So we also have latency. But here in this text, and I looked in the other one, it's a bit obscure, the wording. Not obscure, it's not very clear. Because also they talk about all mistaken dualistic appearance that arise due to the force of that. But it doesn't, in the text, it doesn't say what the that is. Is it arising due to this or this? It's not clear. Certainly in the Prasangika, we also talk about latency of ignorance. And it's very clear in the Prasangika that the latency of ignorance is responsible for the dualistic appearance. But here it's not clear whether that's what they're implying. And I couldn't find in any other tenets text either. So definitely this is the process within Prasangika. Because, and I'll refer now to Prasangika, not Chittamatra, because I'm not sure exactly what they're saying. But they are saying there is a mistaken dualistic appearance. But for them, this means what the mistake is, that things appear to be external. That's what they mean by mistaken dualistic appearance. That things mistakenly appear to be external to the mind. Whereas using the same term in Prasangika, mistaken dualistic appearance doesn't mean that. It means things mistakenly appear to be independent of the mind. Because for Prasangika, things are external. So here's another case where the same word is interpreted differently in Chittamatra and Prasangika. So again, mistaken dualistic appearance, or the opposite of that, when we talk about realizing non-duality in Chittamatra, is talking about the mistaken dualistic appearance is that things mistakenly appear to be external to the mind. And so realizing non-duality in Chittamatra is realizing there's nothing external to the mind. Prasangika also use similar terminology. Mistaken dualistic appearance, you'll see that in Prasangika. But for them, the mistake is not that things mistakenly appear to be external, they mistakenly appear to be independent of the mind that is observing it. So that's a different idea. So if you see in Prasangika, realizing non-duality, which you don't see often, but sometimes you will see it. For Prasangika, realizing non-duality is realizing the mind and the thing that observes are not independent of each other. There's no subject-object duality in terms of them being two independent things. So we need to be careful then when we see mistaken dualistic appearance and realizing non-duality, don't mean the same thing between Chittamatra and Prasangika.
The distinction between being external or being independent.
Yeah. So remember, for the lower schools, for Vaibhashika Satrantika, things are both external and independent. Chittamatra say to the lower schools, you got it wrong because nothing's external. But they still hold independent. Prasangika say, well, no, actually you got it wrong as well, is that nothing is independent, but it's external. So let's summarize that. So by Bashkin, Sarchantika say things exist externally and independent. For them, this is truly existent. Then Chittamatra say, no, you got it wrong. Chittamatra say things are internal and independent. Because remember, for Chittamatra, that flower has true existence. It's not depending on the mind to exist. It exists from its own side, even though it's internal to the mind. Sorry? Because, as we saw yesterday, they arise together. That's why this doesn't depend on the mind apprehending it for it to exist, because they actually arise together. So this is independent of this, because they arise simultaneously. But the Prasangika also reject this, but their conclusion is different than this. So for the Prasangika, things are external and dependent. So that's sort of the difference between Prasangika and Chittamatra. They both reject this, but they come to different conclusions.
What about
They would be similar to the Prasangika, but what they mean by this would be a little bit different, because they accept inherent existence. So, I mean, in their own way of speaking, they would say this, of course, because they're Majjhamikas.
Right.
So all Majjhamikas would say this, but what that means for... There's a subtle difference.
I mean,
in terms of these schools, in terms of... When we talk about the phenomenal world, this is sort of basically the crux of it, yes. Yeah. So if we can sort of appreciate this, we've sort of got a good basis. We've moved somewhere. Okay. So let's... is there any more questions about this so far? So remember... this idea here, I'm not sure whether the text is really saying this or whether the mistaken dualistic appearance is coming from all of these. It's not clear. But certainly for Prasangika, this is how it works. Is that, for Prasangika, there appears to be an independent world there and we grasp onto that. But for Prasangika, there's this mistaken dualistic appearance. That things appear to be independent of us, but they don't exist in that way. And for Prasangikas, the question then is, well, we can ask the question, if things do not exist in the way they appear, meaning if they do not actually exist independent of us, why do they appear to exist like that in the first place? And so the Prasangika answer is because of this. This is the reason. That the latency of ignorance, which is produced from ignorance, another word for latency is stain. That ignorance stains the mind. So, of course, for the lower schools, for Vaibhashika Satranchika, there is no this because things exist as they appear. So there's no such thing as this for the lower schools. But to understand what we mean by this, often in the text they have an example. They talk about a bowl. Imagine you've got a clove of garlic. You put the garlic in the bowl, so the clove is like the seed. But if you, even if you take out the clove of garlic from the bowl, there's still the smell of the garlic that stains the bowl. So that smell of the garlic is like this stain of ignorance. So Prasangikas say that ignorance, not only whenever we have it, it increases the habit of having it, but it has a side effect. It also stains the mind, and that stain of ignorance produces this mistaken dualistic appearance. So for Prasangikas, as we're going to see later, I'm jumping way ahead now, this is the cognitive obscurations for Prasangika. Yeah, so for Prasangika, this is the afflictive obscuration, and this is the cognitive obscuration. For Chittamatra, remember, this is not the same, but they talk about these things. All of this is cognitive obscuration. No, because for them, afflictive obscuration is conception of person, self-sufficient person. This is talking about the conception of true existence, of things existing externally, rather. So for them, this is all cognitive obscuration. But Prasangika would disagree with that. Why couldn't all politicians agree with each other? It'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it? Why couldn't one thing that amazes me is that why couldn't we all agree to have the same plug? I mean, that's pretty simple. And I think there's like about 20 different plugs. And I think in Italy they actually have 3 different plugs in Italy. I mean, that's sort of the classic how we don't agree. Anyway. Okay. Let's move on to the actual presentation of the grounds and paths. There's not a lot to be said here. There's a few paragraphs, but we'll get through them fairly quickly, hopefully. Let's have a look. So also they talk about the 3 vehicles, the 3 lineages, you know, the hearer who listens to teachers a lot to practice, the solitary realizer who sort of goes off on their own to practice, and then the bodhisattva lineage. So here, with the 3 vehicles or the 3 lineages of the hearer, solitary realizer, and bodhisattva, we have a clear distinction in terms of their goal. So remember in Chittamatra and Majjhimika, we have sort of 2 distinct goals, nirvana, enlightenment. So the hearer and solitary realizer both have their goal, nirvana. They're both trying to get out of samsara, whereas the bodhisattva has the goal of enlightenment for the welfare of others. So here in the Mahayana tenet system, Chittamatra and Majjhimika, there's a very clear distinction between those. Whereas in the lower schools, as we saw, there's not really a clear distinction. There's not this distinction of own welfare and others' welfare. We're really just talking about eliminating suffering, achieving liberation, and whether or not we're a hearer, solitary realizer, or bodhisattva, we more or less achieve the same goal, maybe have a little bit different ability once we get there, and then when our life's finished, that's end of story anyway. Whereas here in the Chittamatra and Majjhimika, there's a very clear distinction there that the hearer and the solitary realizer have their main emphasis on being liberated, overcoming suffering. Bodhisattva has more the emphasis of, I want to achieve enlightenment so that I can help to liberate everyone else from suffering. And the reason there is that motivation is that within the Vaibhashika Sautrantika, remember their part of their tenet system is that whether you're an arhat or a Buddha, which there was only one in this whole age according to them, when this body finishes, we end up within this nirvana without remainder, meaning finished. So then it wouldn't make much sense to have an aspiration, a bodhisattva aspiration, saying, I'm going to liberate everyone from samsara. Because with that
basis, this idea that even if we become a Buddha, at the end of that short life, that's end of story, we can't do anything more, wouldn't make any sense to have that motivation. Whereas as we're going to see in the Chittamatra and the Majjhimika system, except for one sort of sub-school in Chittamatra, everyone else says that we're all eventually going to achieve enlightenment, and when we do, and this body finishes, it's not end of story, but we'll keep coming back again and again and again to help people. So then we can really have this bodhisattva aspiration to want to liberate everyone from samsara. It makes sense. So then we have this very clear distinction, and we see that here in this presentation. So if we look at the last sentence on the bottom of page 16, it says, those of hearers' lineage can join the view of realizing selfness as a person with a small accumulation of merit for the sake of their own welfare, and those of the solitary realizers' lineage can join the view of selfness as a person with a middling accumulation of merit for the sake of their own welfare. So again, they're looking out for their own liberation. And in dependence on having cultivated that for at least 3 lifetimes, which is related to the hearer, or 100 eons and so forth is related to the solitary realizer, they actualize their own respective enlightenment. So here, of course, we're talking about they realize a state of nirvana, they become an arhat, and that's their goal. And they've achieved their goal. Whereas, if we look at the next paragraph, it says bodhisattvas can join the view. So remember, for Chittamatra, to achieve nirvana, to become arhat, we only have to realize no self-sufficient, substantially existent person. We don't need to realize there's no external reality to be liberated, according to them. That all we need to do, like the lower schools, is realize no self-sufficient person, and we can achieve nirvana, we can be liberated. But what they do say is if you want to then go on to achieve enlightenment, then you need to realize there's no external reality. That's what it says here. Bodhisattvas can join the view of realizing apprehending subjects and apprehending objects, being empty of being different substances, with a great accumulation of merit for the sake of others' welfare, and in dependence on having cultivated that for at least 3 countless great eons and so on, they actualize their own enlightenment. So here we see that a bodhisattva, to achieve the further goal of enlightenment, not only needs to realize no self-sufficient self, they also need to realize there's no external reality, there's no subject-object duality, they're not different substances. And that is the cognitive obscurations, and if they eliminate that, they can achieve the goal of enlightenment for the welfare of others.
So actually, in the previous paragraph, when it says respective, it means partial.
Sorry, in which paragraph?
When it says in the previous paragraph, they actualize their own respective.
Yeah, respective means the hearers.
Partial in these terms. Because they're not seeing
just the enlightenment. Oh, no, respective, yeah. I mean, respective in terms of that they, yes, it's nirvana. They haven't achieved the full goal.
Yeah.
If we go on, then there's a few more things to comment on this. We'll read the next couple of paragraphs and then we'll comment on it. True aspectarians accept that when hearer and solitary realizer arhats, so remember, true aspectarians here seems to be synonymous with the followers of scripture, followers of a sangha. So accept that when hearer and solitary realizer arhats pass beyond sorrow without remainder, the continuum of awareness is severed. So this sub-school in Chittamatra, like the lower schools, say that when you become an arhat and then you'll pass away, nirvana without remainder, it means your continuum of awareness is severed. So end of story. But they differ from the lower schools because they say they accept that it is impossible to sever the continuum of awareness of an Arya Buddha because they accept that for the bodhisattva who attained enlightenment initially as a Sambhogakaya in Akanishta, so this Sambhogakaya was a very subtle form of an enlightened being that is only perceptible to Arya Bodhisattvas. It says, the continuum of similar type of aspect of that samsara is not severed, as long as samsara is not empty, but rather it enacts the welfare of others through various emanations in accordance with the fortune of each individual disciple. So remember, the lower schools said that even Shakyamuni Buddha, who became a Buddha, at the end of his life, the continuum of his awareness is also severed. But here, because we're talking Mahayana, they're saying, well, for the Buddha, it's not like that. Because when they achieve enlightenment, we have this Sambhogakaya, that even though the Prince Shakyamuni Buddha as a human, appearing as a human, that was finished, because it was a Sambhogakaya, because he achieved enlightenment, that continues to emanate for the welfare of others. So that's what they say. Of course, and then we can continue on, and then we'll comment more. And this is another assertion within the followers, the true aspectarians, or the followers of scripture, the followers of the Sangha. They say also, the individual lineages of the three vehicles are definite because they accept that sentient beings since beginningless time are of three different lineages or dispositions and thus have three different aspirations and thus have three different ways of practicing and thus will attain three different results. So another one of their assertions is if you're a hearer, that's it. You stay a hearer. You can't change. If you're a solitary realizer, you stay that. If you're a bodhisattva, you stay that. So they say that actually then whatever you begin with, that's your goal and that's what you end up. So they talk about three final vehicles because of that. Actually, also in their assertion, they often talk about someone of broken lineage. Someone of broken lineage doesn't have the aspiration and they say that that person is a lost cause. They will never achieve nirvana enlightenment. They also talk about actually someone of indefinite lineage, someone who's not sure, but then when they become definite, they stay in that lineage. They don't move. So that's their assertion. And we'll read the false aspectarians, the followers of reasoning, and give more comment. Exactly what they said, because since beginning this time, they are of three different lineages of dispositions because they have that different disposition. And once that's it, you're stuck. You can't change that. That's their assertion. No, they do talk about someone of indefinite lineage, not sure, but once they enter into a particular lineage, you're in that one. You don't move. So the false aspectarians, and they here seems to be synonymous with the followers of reasoning, which are following Dharmakirti, do not accept that when hearer and solitary realized arhats pass beyond sorrow without remainder, the continuum of their awareness is severed because although they accept that at that time, the continuum of mere awareness that is included in true sufferings and true origins is severed, they accept that the mere awareness goes on to the Buddha ground. Therefore, they accept one final vehicle. So the followers of reasoning, following Dharmakirti, would say that, yes, at the time of nirvana without remainder, the aggregates that are included within true suffering, of course, is severed, finished, but that doesn't mean that the continuum of awareness itself is severed, that it continues on, and therefore whether you become a hearer, arhat, solitary realized arhat, or your bodhisattva, everyone eventually will become Buddha and enlightened. So they accept one final vehicle, as does, of course, all the Majjhimika systems.
But then the true aspectarians would have that heading view of broken limits.
Correct.
The true aspectarians, they're a bit dodgy, they are.
Yeah. So again, you know, the ones who are following Dharmakirti and, of course, all the Majjhimika systems would not accept that at all. Yeah. So it seems like they're sort of still holding on to a little bit of the lower schools thing as they are moving ahead, perhaps. Looks like. Any last question? Otherwise, we've got lunchtime and we've finished the Chittamatra. And so all very clear now, of course. No? Clear? and crystal clear, very good. And we'll talk about onto the Majumica systems starting after lunch. But if there's any last question now before we go for lunch. The consciousness apprehending it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if, but there is no external object for such. If that consciousness is not there, that object is not there.
Yeah. You can't, yeah. And in fact, even in Saltrantika, which you find the definition of existent, that observed by a valid cognizer. And certainly from Prasangika, the same. You can't have subject without object. Yeah. So, again, the object and the consciousness apprehending it arise from the same imprint for Chittamatra, not for the other schools, of course. They wouldn't accept that. But this is a Chittamatra assertion. So you can't have an object without an apprehender for Chittamatra.
So the world as we perceive it is only
in
existence as long as that consciousness is in existence.
Yeah, so what we can say is for Chittamatra, we are all experiencing our own world, internal to our mind. But again, that does not imply solipsism, because there is the theory of solipsism that some people ascribe to, is that the only real thing in the universe is me, my mind. You are all a figment of my imagination, that you don't really exist other than that way. So they're not ascribing to that. So what they're saying is that because our imprints are very similar, our realities are overlapping. So we experience our own world, which in a simple way we can understand. You know, the world is the world that's appearing to us, not to anyone else. So even in a simple way, we can understand we have our own world of experience.
Yeah.
And for them, they say that, yes, that's really the case, and that because they are very similar, they overlap enough that we can really communicate.
So they accept the true existence of one's own mind and also the true existence of other sentient beings.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It's not like that's other phenomena.
But even they, I mean, flower, it truly exists for Chittamatra. You know, the flower is not something merely imputed by the mind. It has its own existence. Although, of course, it's not an external flower. They refute that. But it's of the nature of the mind. But it still truly exists for Chittamatra, the flower, as does the mind as well.
That's you know? Contradictory to say that it's truly existent.
Yeah, of course, the Prasangikas would say that, exactly that, is that...
But remember, again, for the Prasangika, when we say external, does not imply that it's independent.
Yeah.
And, of course, we'll look at their view tomorrow.